Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Somebody please think of the children.
Yeah, what is that?
That was my joints popping.
Oh my god! That's my favorite thing when I'm like, I said to Steve all the time, where I'm like, Steve, did you hear that? He's like, yeah, what was that? I'm like, it was my shoulder. And he's like, Jesus Christ, very bad.
Yeah, like, it was my ankle. My ankle and my toes, I can usually
pop. My favorite fucking thing in my movie is that there's a scene where, like, the lead, one of the leads, like, bends down, and you can hear his knees fucking crack every time he goes down. And because I haven't gone through sound yet, but it's so fucking funny, because every time we would do a take, I'd be like, are your knees okay? Like, I can hear them through the door.
That's and me you're going 24. Upstairs. Me going upstairs, my knees go... And they have for the last, like, I don't know, 18, 20 years, maybe. Anytime I walk, it just goes, kurt.
You're like, well, it's fine. I'm still walking.
I'll never be an assassin.
That's okay. I think
they'll hear me coming miles away.
I know. They're like, what is that sound? It's the bone assassin.
Oh my gosh. It could be like one of those urban legends. Do you remember like Scary Stories where it was like the...
Oh my God.
The guy with like the stump leg or like the half cut off leg. They would go shklump, shklump. It'd be like that, but with my knees going...
It's the Crickle Crackle Man.
Oh my God. This needs to be a movie, The Crickle Crackle Man.
The Crickle.
I hope you're leaving this in.
I'm going to.
Listeners,
I should take it out so you don't take our fucking idea, The Crickle Crackle Man.
Yeah, seriously.
My God.
Copyright that name. listeners, welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly mini-sode where we dig into things that we've been watching, and it is the end of the year. I'm Terry.
I'm Mary Beth. This week we're talking about a 21st century take on Agatha Christie, Frankenstein, but make it horny, Being Famous 5 Ever, a really important documentary, and The Return to Burkittsville. Yeah, it's our last Little Cuts of the year. Weird.
It's very weird. This year has both felt incredibly long and non-existent in a very weird way.
It is the weirdest year of my life. Singularly, the weirdest year of my life so far, I think. I think because I both accomplished a lot of really cool stuff. Like, yeah. I directed a movie.
Yeah.
And, like, did a bunch of cool shit. And then I also simultaneously had, like, one of the worst years. It's very strange, like, and I think so many of us, it feels like a lot of people are kind of in that headspace this year, too. I feel like it's, like, accomplished a lot, but also, I'm emotionally beat down from the world and, like, every other thing going on. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's been...
I always want to complain, but I'm like, I shouldn't. But, like...
As someone told me once, just because other people have pain and there are horrible things, it does not minimize your own pain.
Oh, yeah. It's just one of those things where I'm like, it's hard to say, like, I had a terrible year, because, like, again, cool things happened, but it's just, like...
Yeah.
Other really weird things happened, too.
Yeah.
But we're here. And you know what? I was telling myself the other day, I was, like, feeling really depressed just about, like, this year, being like, Jesus Christ. But I was like, hey, you know what, bitch? You made it. You fucking did it. You survived. You made it through, and you did a pretty good job at it. So, like, give yourself some credit. I'm like, God damn it, the therapy's working. Lord.
Man.
But yeah, I know that we have been watching. I've been both trying to catch up and not catching up as much as I want, but still catching up. So I'm excited. I finally watched one of the things I really wanted to watch for the end of the year. But we'll get to that after we talk about a 21st century take on Agatha Christie.
Yes. So while I have been trying to watch screeners for Gallica FYC, I've been really movied out. And so I've been like, I just want to sit and just binge some kind of show. And luckily for me, Britt Marling's new show, Murder at the End of the World, has finally all the episodes are out. And so this weekend, I binged A Murder at the End of the World, which I absolutely loved. It's almost as if Britt Marling had like a window into my psyche and was like, I'm going to make something that is perfectly here for Terry because it's isolated. It takes place in a snowy, isolated place. It's a murder mystery. There's queerness abounding everywhere. Like, the only thing that could make this better is if it was set under the ocean. You know, like, that is the only thing that would make this better for me. So this is about Darby Hart, played by Emma
Corrin. God damn it. What a fucking name. Darby Hart.
I know, right? Darby is a Gen Z kind of sleuth. Her father, I'm going to say her. I know Corrin goes by they, them, but I believe the character is she, her in this. So Darby is a sleuth. Her father is a mortician or works like doing crime scene type of like autopsies and stuff. She's been raised in that. At one point, she discovers this guy named Bill, played by Harris Dickinson, who's having quite a year too with this and Iron Claw. And
that's where he's from. Okay.
He's also was in Kingsman and Beach Rats.
Oh, he's in Triangle of Sadness.
And Triangle of Sadness, one of my favorites from last year. Yeah, he's a good actor. He's also really cute.
Dang.
And Bill end up discovering in the past a serial killer and end up uncovering who it was. And she writes a book about it. The event has like destroyed her and Bill's relationship. And now years later, she gets this invite to go to a secluded retreat hosted by this billionaire played incredibly menacingly well by Clive Owen. She goes there because her favorite female hacker, Lee, played by Britt Marling, vanished off the face of the earth. And then all of a sudden is married to Clive Owen's character, Andy, the billionaire. And they are off in this retreat. And she goes there and finds out that Andy has summoned a bunch of really smart people from across the world. They're there for some reason that's not immediately. And then when she's there, the very first night she's there, someone dies. I'm not going to say who, but someone dies. And they're saying that it was an overdose. But she doesn't think it was. And so she starts to investigate. Of course, it's in Iceland, secluded, snowy, beautiful, gorgeous. A storm starts to come in. They're kind of stuck there with a potential killer. And then through the 7 episodes of this limited series, it's exploring this basically a locked room mystery, but it also has elements of hacking in it because Darby is a hacker. Lee, Britt Marling's character, was a hacker. So there's some hacking going on. There's AI. There's like an AI assistant that is in the picture. There's like so much going on the technology side that it really does feel like, what would an Agatha Christie mystery look here when people have AI and hacking abilities and high tech?
Huh.
And it's so good. I really enjoyed this series.
I see. This is so funny. I've heard like a little bit about it, but I didn't really know anything. It's on FX, right? Is it on Hulu?
Yep. Can you watch it on Hulu? Mm-hmm. All 7 episodes are on Hulu now. It's definitely a bingeable show. It's really good. The episodes are a little long. Like they're over an hour each for the most part.
Oh, Jesus.
But they're good. And it has very good pacing.
Oh, that's good to hear. Because I'm so used to like Britt Marling stuff being fantasy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ish.
And I was wondering. And I was wondering if this was going to go in that direction. It doesn't. But there is a lot to do with technology that does feel very reminiscent of the OA in terms of like verging into science fiction type territory, but also being not at the same time. I would say this is a lot more grounded than the OA. If people were a little put off by some of the weirdness of the OA, this is definitely a lot more grounded.
Okay. Because like I liked the OA until I didn't like the OA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Yeah. And I've heard good things about this, and it's got a cool cast. Alice Braga's in it, and I love her.
She's great.
And it looks
the cast
like
is uniformly fantastic.
Really well, like Britt Marling and Zal Batmanglij, or Batmanglij, which is I think usually her writing partner. They usually, I mean, even if it's not my favorite, they're really good at writing really interesting stuff. So
yeah,
that's cool and to hear. Because I think she's I think Britt Marling's cool.
I do too.
I just think like she does some cool shit. Yeah.
And the murder mystery here is really interesting. And even though I kind of like figured out a little bit where it's going, the implications of it definitely like stayed in my mind after I watched it. It was like, ooh, it has me thinking about it days after I watched it, just because it's so interesting and it's so intricately laid out. And it goes back and forth, mostly set in this frozen tundra, but also her relationship with Bill before it disintegrated and searching for that first serial killer. And so there's like parallels there and there's like connections there, and it's really interesting. I really liked it. And the entire thing, it's a limited series supposedly, and it's all out on Hulu. So I would totally recommend giving it
and
a shot.
Britt Marling directs a couple episodes and she doesn't ever direct. So that's cool. Yeah. She writes everything, but she doesn't direct. So it's cool she got to direct a couple episodes.
Yeah, and she did a really good job. Those episodes are, I think, some of my favorite.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to have to see that. I'm now going to have to watch that. And I love a good murder mystery, so.
Yeah, me too. And this was a good one. That felt very like now in terms of like technology and stuff. But also speaking of technology in a way, Frankenstein but make it horny. I am very excited to hear your thoughts and I'm very excited to see this movie.
So I finally saw Poor Things, the new Yorgos Lanthimos movie that is out now. And you know what? I wasn't sure. I was worried about the hype. People hype things up. It's Yorgos Lanthimos. People are weird about Yorgos Lanthimos. But I was very excited about this movie. So for those of you who are unaware, it's basically it's a Frankenstein story. Willem Dafoe plays Dr. Godwin Baxter, who essentially puts the brain of a baby into a woman who has recently died and and reanimates her and creates Bella Baxter, his protege. And Bella Baxter is played incredibly by Emma Stone with black hair, which is like incredible on her. And it is essentially a story of her brain growing from a little baby into like a fully actualized woman who realizes her place in society but is also unabashedly herself and is not afraid to give in, like to cater to her sexual desires. And it's this incredible, fantastical story about female liberation and autonomy. And it's not necessarily saying anything like shockingly new about like women and men being kind of shitty. And it's like very much like obvious, but it's done in such a stylish, funny, smart way that it feels new. Like the whole thing is like men are stupid and like don't like women. And it's like, yeah, we know. But this just does it in such an interesting way, like using the Frankenstein kind of like framework. I know that this Poor Thing is a book.
Oh, is
that
it?
Yes. So Poor Things. That. Let me just like triple check that. Yes, it's based on the 1992 novel of the same name by Alistair Gray. So Poor Things is essentially an adaptation of Frankenstein, but it's from one of the characters in the movie's like perspective. His name is Archibald McCandles. But basically, it's about her life figuring out sex and desire and socialism and sex work and how pathetic men are. And it is so many things. It is a Yorgos Lanthimos movie through and through, in that it is like very dry, but it's very funny.
I was gonna ask, and it's really funny.
It's really funny, and like it's funny because I saw it in a theater with like it wasn't empty, but there weren't a lot of people, and like it was funny. It was interesting to see when people laughed and if they got it, because Yorgos Lanthimos is such like a his comedy is so like understated. You know, there's not like time for a punchline. There's not like this big moment. It's just like a lot of just really funny shit people say. And if you don't catch it, it's like you don't laugh. But I was like laughing, other people weren't. And I'm like, oh, they did not understand like what weird wordplay this guy was doing here. And I love that. Like, Willem Dafoe's character is essentially, like, is a mad scientist who casually will drop hints like, oh yeah, my dad, like, took out all these organs out of me because he was trying to do science and he learned it and now I don't have any organs. And it's like, what? He's like, yeah. And then it just, like, the all of these, like, such matter-of-fact weird things. And then, but then my favorite is when characters go, what the fuck are you talking about? And then I start laughing even more because then there's that acknowledgement of it being insane.
Yeah.
So I love that about that. Like, it's very much his sense of humor in terms of just being like, what in the hell? And it's just like, yeah, that's just, like, the world he's created. It's just like...
I think that's what I like about his stuff, even when I don't quite understand it. Like, I need to rewatch Killing of a Sacred Deer because, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is not the movie I thought it was going to be. And so I was, like, resisting it at all, like, all fronts. But what I do love about it is what you said, this, like, matter-of-fact weirdness. And that is something that, like, I've only seen two of his movies. I saw The Favorite and The Killing of a Sacred Deer. But matter-of-fact weirdness is totally... describes him to a T.
Yes. Lobster is very much like that. So is Dogtooth. That's like, he's absurd. But what's different about Poor Things is that it is so directly set in, like, a fantastical type of Victorian life. Like, it's incredibly a fantasy. It's not grounded. It's, like, not really grounded in reality. There's, like, because Willem Dafoe's character is, like, a mad scientist, there's, like, creatures with dog bodies and goose heads, or, like, a French bulldog head and a chicken body, like, walking around.
Man, I can't wait to see this.
It's fun. And so because that's the thing, it's, like, it's smart, but it's not, like, I don't think it's trying to really say anything new, but it's not I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's just trying to be, like, here's a really weird female character who, like, does not apologize for how blunt she is and, like, says exactly what she wants and loves to fuck and, like, drives pathetic men insane. And it's like, yeah, that's fucking rules. And, like, it's just a joy.
Sexy?
It's,
Or is it just...
No, because all the sex scenes are, like, really realistic-ish. Okay. Realistic's not the right word. It's not trying to be, like, provocative. It's more, like, exciting that she's discovering the reality of sex.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, like, the sex scenes are more focused on her, like, having pleasure, and it's also, like, frantic sex. It's not necessarily, like, sexy sex. So it's one of those movies where it's really horny, because she's really horny, and she's all constantly talking about, like, people fucking her, making her come. But, like, none of the sex is necessarily, like, hot.
Okay.
But it's, like, fun sex. I say reality of sex because, like, it depicts sex as being a little bit more, like, fun, a little bit more, like, yeah. And her discovering that nature of sex and, like, the playfulness of sex, which I really like. It goes on a lot. It's like, almost 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And it definitely, this is, like, the main complaint I've seen that I very much agree with, is that, like, it just keeps making the same point over and over again. In terms of, like, look, men want to imprison women and don't care about women. And it's just like, yeah, I got it. I got it the first couple of times.
Right.
I did get that quite. So it's like, I just think there were some things where I was like, I don't need the guy's perspective. I just want hers. Like, I don't need to really see what these guys are doing while she's out on her adventures. Like, I don't really care. That's me personally. But I'm like, I truly would have rather just focused on her the whole time rather than being like, because she goes off with an incredible, oh my God, fucking Mark Ruffalo plays an incredible little shit, little fucking
I've heard
pathetic
he's great
little,
in this.
He's just, everyone is just having so much fun. This is the most fun Yorgos Lanthimos movies because most of his movies are like really dark and like kind of grim. This one's not. This one's actually quite playful and quite warm and quite kind. Which is shocking coming from him, because a lot of his stuff is so fucking dark and just, like... But this one is much more joyful, which is cool to see from him, honestly. To see, like, that joy and kind of, like, vigor for life and watching a character kind of learn how to love the world and life and kind of... It's quite heartwarming, actually, weirdly enough.
I forgot Christopher Abbott was in this.
Yeah, I tried to look up as little as possible, because I just, like, was so... fucking pumped for this movie. And when he popped up, I was like, what the hell? Yeah, he's at the end.
I love
Yeah, him. it's a really amazing movie. It's a little overstuffed in terms of trying to make the point that we all kind of got, like, it's pretty easy to get after the first hour and a half. You're kind of like, yeah, no, like, guys are shitty and want to control women and they get really shitty when they can't do it. Like, and maybe it's because I'm a woman too. And I'm just like, yeah, I get it. That's, again, I'm not saying it has to be some, like, revolutionary feminist text. I think it's just cool that a movie like this is out and a lot of people are going to see it in theaters.
Yeah,
and I think that's
responding
really cool
to it.
Because, like, Bella Baxter is such a cool character in terms of just, like, women being... I read it, too, as, like, neurodivergent women. Like, again, she's has a brain of a baby, and she's, like, learning how to be a person. So, like, I know that that is the literal read. But as the movie progresses, and she's still very blunt, she feels like a neurodivergent woman who is unapologetic in her neurodivergence. And, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's the kind of fucking character we need to see. We need to see a horny, loud... opinionated chick who is unabashedly herself and never apologizes for it and is like, she's not a bad person, she just makes a lot of mistakes and she's like, yeah, I fuck up, but like, that's just the nature of myself. And I'm like, shit, if I had seen this when I was like in high school, I probably would have had a much different trajectory, you know what I mean? Like, and it's really yep. interesting that like it's written by a man, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. It's always very interesting. And again, like, this is why it's like, you know, it's really, really hard to say, like, men can't tell, like, stories about women. Because, like, I think this is pretty good. Like, pretty well told. And really, like, understanding the assignment. You're not trying to make some crazy statement. But you're doing it in a way with a character that is incredible. And speaks to a lot of women who are like, oh, yeah, that's me. Fuck yeah. It just brings me a lot of joy that that exists. It's like, I didn't even, like, I knew there was discourse. There's, like, discourse about her not having her period or something weird, and I didn't even look into that. Like, the discourse is discoursing, and I'm like...
the discourse like, the in general fucking... anymore is like, I'm so glad I'm not involved. I'm not,
foul.
I don't pay attention to
I know.
It. It's just like,
I don't pay it. I can't.
I'm just like,
I'm gonna drive my...
what are we even talking about now?
I know, and I was just like, why are... The whole point of this movie is that men are taking advantage of her, even though she's got the brain of a baby, because men want women who don't speak. Like, I thought we all knew that was the point of the movie. Why are we being weird about, like, consent issues in this? I know. And, like, there isn't... They really do interesting stuff with talking about consent in this, too. And, like, her having sex and people taking advantage of that versus her knowing when she's having... Like, it's... And there's never, like, sexual assault. I mean, like... We could talk, like, that's a whole other conversation, but, like, all of the sex you see Bella having, she is consenting to, and, again, that is a discussion about, like, her mental, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Right.
But, like, there isn't any real feeling here, I think, of her being, like, sexually assaulted. It's her, like, trying things out and being like, I didn't like that, but...
Not for me.
Now I know. So, I liked that, too. It didn't, like... utilize sexual assault for her to like learn about the world, because this is a kind of movie where I could very much see an edgelord director
yeah
using sexual assault, but he doesn't. He has her choose to become a sex worker and have rough sex and her be like, that was weird, but I didn't hate it. And I was like, I love this. Like, it's just like very matter of fact, like, nah, yeah, it's, I think it lives up to the hype. Again, it's a little long, drags a little. It's very much like, yeah, I get it. Men are poopy and take advantage of women. But it's a really just, like, delectable, delicious, like, feast of a movie. And goddamn, the clothes are so good in this whole movie. All of her outfits. I'm not a puffy sleeve girl, but I'll wear a puffy sleeve now because of the fits in this movie. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping to see it this weekend. I really want to see it.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of time. It's like it's a holiday break, but like I'm doing shit with people. So I'm like, I don't actually have a break. But last night I was like, I need to take myself on a movie date or like I'm going to lose my mind. And I need to see Poor Things like 2 weeks ago because I just like need it in my mm-hmm. eyeballs. So, I mean, last note, Yorgos Lanthimos, I mean, like really knows how to work with like one, he picks good scripts to work with that have really well-written female characters because I love The Favorite.
Yeah, me too.
But I also think he understands female characters. You know what I mean? Like, have you seen Dogtooth? You haven't. Oh, no. You haven't seen Dogtooth.
I've only seen, like, The Favorite and The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Dogtooth is weird, but it's like, I think he has a respect for female characters that I think not a lot of directors have. I have to, like, rewatch more of his movies to, like, to really dig into it, because some of his movies, like Killing of a Sacred Deer and The Lobster, are, like, a lot about, like, masculinity and, like, shitty dudes. But he also was really good at writing, like, badass, complicated, not writing, because he didn't write Poor Things, but, like, he's really good at, like,
translating it,
casting and translating these women to screen and making them so interesting and, like, not perfect.
That's what I thought about
really
The Favorite.
Fascinating. Yeah, and he does that with Poor Things really well, and it's really impressive. It's just really cool. Again, it's not impossible. I know men can do it, but it's just cool to see how he translates, like, his female characters to screen, and I really appreciate that from him as a director. So that's Poor Things. Sweet. Check that out, guys. It's good as shit. And like I said, it's not as, like, it's not, like, kind of as obtuse as maybe his other movies. It's definitely his more kind of cheerful, a little bit more straightforward. Definitely got his flares in it, but it's not Killing of a Sacred Deer or The Lobster. It's very different, like, in tone and approach.
Killing was quite a lot for me to take in. Going from The Favorite to that, and the only reason I wanted to see it was because Nicole Kidman, and I'm a Nicole Kidman gay, and so that's why I wanted to see it. And that was a lot.
He's definitely gone into making a little bit more, like, commercial, like, still him, but, like, a little bit more commercially attractive. Which, like, I mean, I would love to see him do another weird-ass movie, but, it, like, he's definitely working in, like, towards a more, like, commercial trajectory. Because going from Dogtooth to Poor Things is a very funny trajectory for him as a director. Anywho, being famous five ever.
Yes. So, what another is completely swing. Again, I'm watching a lot of TV.
Okay.
And this is, okay, so this is a show that got me back on my 30 Rock kick. And it's funny that I'm watching this while people are celebrating 30 Rock.
Are you so excited about 30 Rock being all over Twitter right now?
Oh, when I logged into Twitter, because, like, I'll be honest, I have not really been paying attention to Twitter that much, but I logged in and I'm seeing, like, why is everyone talking about 30 Rock and why am I not being tagged in everything? Because this is, like, heaven for me. And it was, like, a brief respite from the dreg of Twitter. But, okay, this is a show called Girls 5 Eva that is on Peacock. I think it was canceled by Peacock, but it was being saved by Netflix. And so the third season is going to come out on Netflix in March. And I did not realize that this show was from a lot of the same creative teams that gave us 30 Rock and gave us Kimmy Schmidt. So it's Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, who are the producers of this, among with many others, but they also produced and created 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt. And it also was exec produced by Jeff Richmond, who is Tina Fey's husband, who did all the music in 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt. And he's also doing all the music for this. So all of the, like, funny songs from Kimmy Schmidt and stuff, he has, like, his hand in. And this is a TV show about a girl group from the late 1990s called Girls 5 Eva. That had, well, they were a one-hit wonder, and their song was Gonna Be Famous 5 Eva, because 4 Eva is too short. Gonna Be Famous 3 Gather, because that's one more than 2 Gather, is the lyrics to the song. And they were a one-hit wonder, and now in 2023, or I guess 2020 maybe, when this first started, a rapper samples their song, and they get another shot at, like, being famous. And so they get the group back together, or those that remain. There was 5 of them. One is now dead, ? And so there's four women.
Sorry. I don't know why that makes me laugh, but it's really funny.
And so, like, there's flashbacks to them in, like, 1999, and it's all of them playing, like, younger versions of themselves, except for one of them. And then it's also this other woman that may have died, unsure, completely.
Cool. Hell yeah.
But the cast is Sarah Bareilles.
Oh.
The singer. Busey Phillips. Renee Elise Goldsberry, who I believe is, like, really big on, like, Broadway as well.
Yeah, she was in the original run of Hamilton. She was...
Angelica?
Remember which fucking... Yes! Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I love her voice.
And so she is sort of like... Each one is sort of like a and then there's Paula Pell. Paula Pell is mostly known as a writer, but she did have like a... guest appearances on 30 Rock as one of the characters' wives. Wives? One of the characters' wife. She's also a writer. She's written a lot for SNL. She wrote for 30 Rock. She's really funny. And so it is the four of them as adults trying to get back together and finding their groove as 40-something women. One of them, Paula Pell's character, she was like closeted in the 1990s, and now she's out and proud as a lesbian. We have Renee's character is Wiki, and she's sort of the Beyonce of the group. Busey Phillips' character is the religious character that, like, was, like, in this perfect relationship with this guy who is obviously gay. And then we have Sarah Bareilles' Dawn, who wants to be a songwriter, and she's not very good at it. But they're all trying to, like, recapture their essence of being a girl group from the 1990s. And it's so funny. It's so funny. And it definitely...
I've never even fucking heard of this.
I'd heard of it, but I literally did not put it together that this was from a lot of the creative team behind Kimmy Schmidt and 30 Rock. And that made me want to go seek it out once I found that out. And it's on Peacock right now, the first two seasons. Okay. I think it's absolutely hilarious. One of the songs in the second season that they're working on is called BPE, Big Pussy Energy.
Oh, fuck yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is called Girls Five Eva?
Girls Five Eva. One word.
Is it girl with a Z or with an S?
With an S. Okay. It should have been with a Z now that I'm thinking about it. But yeah.
Yeah, it should have been with a fucking Z, but okay.
But it's
okay.
Great. It is. It's hilarious. It's very quick. They're, you know, 30-minute episodes.
Oh, cool.
Very funny. Very funny. And if you like 30 Rock or Kimmy Schmidt, then the humor here is very... on par. There's some really funny lines coming out of this.
Cool.
Misu has thoughts about the humor.
What? What do you want? She really liked it.
Yeah, she should. It's great. That's Girls Five Eva, and I'm so excited that it's going to come to Netflix, and hopefully more people will know about it, because...
Oh, yeah. I bet she wants to hit Netflix. It's going to fucking blow up. I bet. I guarantee.
That's Girls Five Eva. And now, probably veering wildly away, a really important documentary.
Yeah, I did not watch a lot of horror this week. Again, I'm trying, I'm looking through all of the screeners that I have for critic stuff, and I was gonna watch a couple things, and then this documentary popped up as like one of the available screeners, and I was like, I haven't watched a lot of documentaries that weren't like true crime, and I want to watch a good queer documentary. I'll watch this, and this is called Everybody, not Everybody, but Everybody. Okay. So two words. Mm-hmm. This came out this year. This is by one of the directors who did the RBG documentary. I don't know how anyone feels about RBG or that, but this Julie Cohen, she usually works with another director, Betsy West, I believe. They make really interesting documentaries about Betsy West. Yeah, they make documentaries about, you know, cool people and queer people. So they've done, like, they did one on Polly Murray, who is a non-binary Black lawyer. They did one on Julia Child, and then they did one on Gabby Giffords. And so, you know, they're kind of like very polished document, like kind of triumphant documentaries about people overcoming odds and like from like marginalized communities, a lot of white women. But Everybody is just Julie Cohen, and it is about intersex people, and it is about educating the world about what it means to be intersex, which is not a topic a lot of people talk about. I think we hear a lot of times, like, you know, you hear people talk about intersex people in like theoretical terms. You see, you know, the I and LGBTQIA, and it's kind of like, well, what does that even mean? And so this documentary is kind of like a pretty good, quick, comprehensive education on what it means to be intersex and the absolute horseshit medical things that intersex people are put through on a daily basis, and the history of the treatment of intersex bodies. And so there are three main characters in this that Julie interviews. They're all three intersex people who have different types of, like, who are a different type of intersex. There are, I think, over 40 different types of, like, ways to be intersex, basically.
Oh, wow,
like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so that, again, like, so there's, you can be, there are, like, a lot of different ways that a person can be identified as intersex, because it can be, it's how you're either, like, your biology, like, do you have testes that haven't descended? Do you not have a vaginal canal? Like, some people don't have vaginal canals. Some people are, and, like, have androgen resistance. Some people have XY chromosome. Like, again, like, and if I'm misspeaking on anything with intersex people, I apologize. I'm not as well versed on it, but it's a really, really good documentary for understanding how, like, intersex people have been treated. Because I think a lot of the time, intersex people aren't really talked about in these conversations about queerness, because I think a lot of times people talk about trans people, which is not a bad thing, but I think intersex people kind of get lost in the conversation, because a lot of the time, intersex people, a big thing in this documentary is talking about is how, like, doctors would see a baby born with, like, displaying sex organs or, like, sexual care, like, you know, characteristics in their genitals of both male and female. They'll say, oh, you should just do this now for your kid, and just, like, not have them have to live a life of not knowing what they are. And so there was this, like, again, like, the binary way we are thinking is, like, medicalizing these people's bodies and, like, putting people through hormone therapy as kids and having to go through hormone therapy their entire lives to become what a doctor said they should be, and not letting a kid decide for themselves. Especially if it's, like, and a lot of, and, like, the big point of this is, like, it's surgery that's unnecessary. It's not, like, oh, they're just displaying both sets of, like, sex organs or, like, characteristics of each. If it's, like, medically necessary in terms of, like, they will be hurt or, like, die if they don't do it, that's not the case in most of these cases. A lot of it is, like, you can let the kid kind of decide when they can consent to having these, like, big changes in gender basically forced upon them. And how, like, this one of these doctors who was, like, the main intersex doctor for a long time essentially was, like, leading a lot of people to hurting themselves because he was, like, forcing them into these boxes that didn't necessarily, like, fit. And basically, instead of giving kids any kind of autonomy, it's telling parents, well, here's what you need to do to make your kid one thing or the other. And so the documentary, and, like, I have a friend who is intersex, and I've heard about some of this stuff before, so, like, I was lucky enough to, like, kind of know a little bit more, but, like, a lot of people don't know, like,
yeah,
and a lot of people don't talk about if they're intersex, because people, like, there's a lot of these, like, a lot of this, the interview subjects in this, like, you could say are, like, passing as female, or, like, oh, that's a woman, and it's, like, no, actually, this person has XY chromosomes, and so they identify, they use she, they pronouns, and so it's not as easy. And so it's, like, a lot of people, you might know intersex people, but they're not gonna, like, you know, they're not gonna tell you. It's not like intersex people look inherently different or, like, have an inherently different vibe. It's, like, they're really private about it, because a lot of the time it's, like, their genitals, and who the fuck wants to be, like, hey, I have weird genitals, because we all know how people act about that. And there's also a really interesting discussion about, like, disclosing, like, well, your testes never descended, but do you tell them that you have testes? Like, indeed, it's just, like, it's a very kind of, like, it's got, like, a lot of polish on it. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of these documentaries that's, like, very much, like, oh, yeah, that's, like, a good documentary, but it's a necessary documentary. Because a lot of people don't know about intersex people. They don't know that, like, there are up to 40 different variations of what being intersex can look like, and that there are children being forced to go under these surgeries, and, like, people are ruining their bodies are being ruined by doctors for their entire lives. So yeah, it's quick, it's good. It's definitely one of those, again, a documentary that's got, like, a lot of sheen on it, and it's, like, very, like, kind of happy, even though it's, like, dark subject matter, but it's not a bad thing. It's a really good, like, here is what intersex looks like, can be, and, like, here is kind of a history of intersex activism that I think as queer people we should learn about. We should learn about every member of the queer community, and I think intersex people are very often left out of these conversations of queerness. and they need to be folded into the conversation much more. It's and they talk a lot, like not a lot, but they talk about this like intersex versus trans and kind of like how it can all, you know, it gets interlocked a lot of the time. You know, these people are assigned genders, but they're not that gender. And it's just like, it's very interesting hearing these three subjects. They have like kind of talk about how they interrogated their own gender identity because of their intersex identity. And I think it's a crucial queer documentary. It's not like earth shattering, but I also just think it's a topic that no one ever talks about or thinks about. And I think way more people need to talk about it. Cause like, yes, intersex people aren't like everywhere, but they're also not like super uncommon either. So, you know, let's not create shame around something like this. And again, like when people talk about gender affirming care, it's for intersex people too. Like intersex people need gender affirming care too. And so like, it's just another really interesting look at like how binary, living on a binary in terms of identity is really silly because like biologically these people do not exist on the binary. So why are we trying to force people to live inside of a binary? It's on Amazon Prime or Prime Video, streaming now. It's also on digital to rent, but it is streaming. It's in Prime. So it's an hour and 30 minutes. I think it's a really important piece of queer work that came out this year, and they interview and talk to a lot of intersex advocates and people, and their parents too, which I think is really interesting. They get to kind of talk to some of the subjects' parents about like their reactions to trying to like do their best for their kids, and showing how like it's really easy to blame the parents and you're allowed to be angry at the parents, but it's so hard because parents aren't even given like the right information to make the right decisions for their kids. So yeah. That's Everybody.
Yeah, I saw the screener come in for that one, and I didn't know what it was. I just, you know, I'm going through all my list of screeners, and I saw it, and I never even thought about it. But I just added that to my watch list, because it's really important, as you mentioned. So
yeah. Well, like, I signed in to watch... I think I signed in because I wanted to watch The Holdovers, and they're both so from good. Focus Features. I know, and I didn't watch it yet. But because I saw Everybody, and I was like, wait, shit, I need to watch, like, I should watch a good queer documentary, because, like, it's end of year for Gallica, like, I need to at least have seen some, like, queer stuff, more queer stuff, and so, yeah, I highly recommend, just, you know, learn up, if you don't know anything, or really are, like, very unaware about intersex people and intersex stuff, highly recommend. Speaking of documentaries, not really, but like kind of.
Sort of.
We continued on our found footage journey in a very exciting way this week. Terry, what did we watch this week for our found footage series?
We revisited the 2016 Blair Witch, and y'all, I think we as horror fans did this movie wrong
back then. We did. We did Blair Witch so dirty in 2016, and Adam Wingard deserves an apology.
And the thing is that I walked out of the movie theater going, I really enjoyed that. And then I did too. You see, like, the discourse online is like how terrible it was. And I was like, did I not see the same movie? And so it's been 7 years since I probably have seen it. And I was, so I was like, I was curious to see what it was going to be like at home, 7 years away, having seen a bunch of found footage movies. And I really, really like this movie.
I think I liked it even better this time because now I have even more of a language for found footage after watching so much of it. Jesus Christ, the door just opened so abruptly as if my cat. She wanted to talk about found footage. You want to talk about found footage? No. But, like, just the way that they... So this is Adam Wingard. Adam Wingard did Your Next, The Guest... the Godzilla movies, like the big, those are the big ones, I guess more people would know him for. And Simon Barrett wrote it. And Simon Barrett has done like, VHS segments. He wrote that movie and directed that movie Seance. That wasn't my favorite, but you know, what can you do? But he's written a lot. He wrote The Guest. He wrote You're Next. Yeah, so he's worked a lot with
Adam.
He's worked a lot with Adam. And he also wrote, I just realized this, he wrote Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, which is hilarious. So we'll see how that goes for Simon Barrett.
Did he really?
Very interesting. Yeah, that's what the internet's telling me.
Oh.
He wrote it. Good for him. Whatever. Yeah. You know what? Get that bag. But they basically pick up with the sibling of Heather Donahue going to look for her in the woods because there's another tape. A tape got uploaded online and it looks like his sister in a mirror. And he says, I have to find her. And so he and three friends go to the woods with Callie Hernandez's character. I love her. Basically making a documentary about his obsession with his sister and trying to get closure on what happened to her. And I really liked at the beginning how they kind of grapple with that. They're like, is this ethical for you to be doing this? And she's like, it's fine. I'm not exploiting him. And they're like, are you sure?
Are you sure, though?
Well, and I like that. I think this movie is having a lot of interesting conversations with itself about, like, I think you could even talk like about making sequels and like picking things up and like not letting things die. I think it's a really interesting kind of look at that. But then they also, before they are officially in the woods, they meet up with the two people who uploaded the video that they found, who are supposedly from Burkittsville, Maryland. And they're like, we'll only go with you and show you where you found this tape if you let us come with you. So they get two weirdo Marylanders to go with them. And so there's two more added to their party here.
And I forgot that the introduction to these two characters is going to their house and there is a Confederate flag underneath somewhere over the rainbow. And that is such a bizarre pairing of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is inherently a queer thing, as well as this Confederate flag, which just speaks racism. And I'm looking at this going, what is happening here?
And there's two black characters. Like half of the main group of people are black characters. So it's already that added. And that's funny in Maryland with the Confederate flag. Because in my head, I'm like, no. But then I'm also like, wait, ew, I went to school in Southern Maryland where people would drive around with Confederate flags on their cars. Because people like, even because we're technically south of the Mason-Dixon line, some people love to say that we're the South. And I'm like, okay. Like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But yeah, no, that's actually not too outside of the realm of possibility. Just in case anyone was wondering about the Confederate flag being flown in Maryland. It's not. It's more likely than you'd think.
I know, which is depressing. Okay, so it's funny because, like, we talked about something that we can't talk about yet. But we talked when we were talking about that, about drones. The use of drones in found footage.
Yes.
And I still am very disappointed that the drone does not get featured a whole lot in this movie.
That is the one thing that will always, that is the one thing about this movie that always bothers me. They have such a setup with them testing the drone, like in the parking lot. And they're like, we're going to use it to like help us find our way or something. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. They're setting up a cool drone thing. And they fumble it so bad. It's such a bummer. Like,
it really is.
There's a couple good uses of drones in found footage, but I still haven't seen a good, like a really good use of a drone yet. And I'm waiting for it, but it's a bummer. It's a little bit of a bummer. But I think what I always forget about this movie is that for the longest time it was not, no one knew it was a Blair Witch movie. They kept just calling it The Woods. Mm-hmm. And, like, I remember being so excited about that. I was like, what the fuck is The Woods? Like, because this came out in 20... I started teasing this in, like, 2016, 2015. So that was when, like, I was out of college. I hadn't fully started doing horror freelancing yet, but I was, like, getting more into that world. And so I was so excited to hear about this. And then when I heard it was a Blair Witch sequel, I was like, what the fuck? Like, I was so stoked. As we all know, my history with the Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. So, and I saw it in theaters and I had a great time. I was pretty impressed with what they did. I mean, it's so hard to make a sequel to the Blair Witch Project. Like, how do you even fucking do that? You know what I mean? Like, they capture lightning in a bottle. You can't do that again. And I think they did a really admirable job trying to take the mythology that already exists and expand upon it. Like, they try to talk more about Rustin Parr and the lore. And I really do appreciate how they try to take what happened in the original movie and explain it with like the time loop stuff or and getting caught. Like I think that's cool as shit. I was super fucking into that. I'm like, exactly. Like that's, I think how you should do this. Like even, and this is, I think an example of a big swing that maybe people think misses, but it tries, like it really does try to like expand the mythology and not just remake the original movie. And I appreciate that as it's what it's trying to do and how it integrates new kinds of technology into capturing whatever is happening in the woods.
My thought, when I remember leaving the movie theater and thinking this thought, and then rewatching it, continuing to have this thought, that this is an alien movie.
Yes! Oh my god, we've talked about that. Yeah, because there's the big flash at the end, right? There's like the lights at the end. Yeah,
so there's like a lot of lightning, and then as well as the time dilation, which a lot of people talk about in terms of like being abducted. Okay. There's these really weird creatures. There's a so Simon Barrett at one point mentions that you don't actually see the Blair Witch in this movie. And so like,
but there's a monster that we see, right?
There's monsters.
There's like weird things. Okay. I'm like, I saw that, right? Like, I know I've seen this movie multiple times, but I'm just like, huh?
Yeah. So apparently, he has said that I had this pulled up somewhere. Now I can't find it, but apparently there was an interview with Simon Barrett that mentions that he's not actually in it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I'm like,
yeah, they got that weird long limbed white, like the really creepy pale thing that I thought was the Blair Witch. But
yeah, well, because they set it up earlier in the film where they talk about how, like, you know, she was hung from a tree, but then she had like weights attached to her. And I was like, oh, they're elongated. So this is what we're getting here.
Yeah.
But apparently not, according to this one interview with Simon.
And, like, I love thinking about the Blair Witch Project as cosmic horror. And I think that
this
lends to cosmic horror. And I think aliens can factor into cosmic horror. And I just think that especially with the time dilation, and, like, we've been walking around for 5 days and haven't seen the sunrise. Like, I'm sorry, I would be pissing and shitting my pants. What do you mean I've been walking for 5 days and haven't seen shit? I've been stuck in an infinite time loop. Are you fucking joking? And, like, that kind of unknowable, confusing, and, like, we've talked about this before. The original leans into that, but this one, I think, throws itself into the cosmic horror of what's going on, which, again, I appreciate. It's expanding on what we already know and making it even more horrifying, especially because we have new kinds of technology and, like, the Blair Witch has gotten smarter, and I just think it's a really interesting kind of, like, taking what we have and making it feel fresh but familiar. And I still think they did a great job. I still forever think that with Ashley having that fucking wound and there's something in her fucking foot.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk,
I wish they did that. More with that, but I fucking love that. Like, there's a lot of cool body horror happening in this that I wish they had more of, but they're doing something really cool with that, with her.
I did find this and it's on Thrillist, which is but there was this this discussion about the point, because she like pulls something out of her, and I can never really tell what it is, but they say that it's bark, and so they're suggesting that Ashley is being turned into
like a stick figure.
A stick figure.
That's what I thought when I saw it. Like, she's getting turned into part of the woods or something. Like,
which is gnarly, and I would have loved to see more of that.
Wasn't that cool? I think that's the biggest problem with this movie, is I think it's got a lot of really good ideas, but I think it doesn't commit to all of, like, it commits, but it doesn't commit to all of the weirdness. Like, I think it could have been even weirder if they had, like, committed to, like, them turning into, like, tree people or whatever.
I do think that is my biggest complaint on a rewatch and thinking about it, is that there's a lot of really, as you said, really great ideas. There's a lot of really good sequences. The shot of Ashley's foot when something's moving underneath it, the part where she's pulling the branch out, when all of the, like, tents go flying up into the air, which is, again,
my first thought about
abduction, because they're flying up in the air, right? And so, like, we have all this kind of stuff. You hear the trees crunching in the background. There's a lot of these really cool moments that you could take in a variety of different directions, and the movie never really commits to anything. And so I do think that might be my biggest complaint, is that there's so many great little nuggets here that I kind of wish they had followed through on, as opposed to being a bit more maximalist in terms of throwing everything into it in a way. But I will say, the third act, I still love the third act in the house.
Right? Terrifying. I think it's terrifying. They take, again, like, they take that end sequence from the original that we expect in the house, but they, again, make it even scarier, like make it even weirder. And yes, like it's not going to have the same exact effect, but I think they know that, like, you're not going to be able to have that effect. Like, it's just, no, it's not your fault. It's just their Blair Witch sequel. And this only had a budget of $5 million, which is pretty impressive. And it grossed 45.2. So, like, good for them, you know? And so I interviewed Adam Wingard. It was this year. I think it was earlier this year, though.
Was it this year? Wow.
I don't remember. I interviewed him within the last year, I think, about, like, the guests. They did, like, a guest two, like, concept soundtrack. And so I asked him about the Blair Witch. I was like, look, we don't have to talk about this, but, like, I love Blair Witch 2016. He's like, I'm glad you did. And he was like, yeah, you know, there are a lot of things I wish I had done differently. But I will say, like, he was talking about how they were editing it and watching cuts and, like, weird things would happen in his house. Like, things would open and close and shit. And I was like, no, thank you. No, thanks. That was pretty cool. So it's like, I know, I feel bad. Because it's not a bad movie. I think it's really well done. It's fun. It's good. It's scary. I think they take what we already know and make it different, and they show us monsters, and I just think people need to, like, this is going to start getting reappraised again soon, I bet you. It's getting up on 10 years soon, and, like, that happened with Jennifer's Body. Remember when Jennifer's Body had its 10-year anniversary, and everyone was like, wait, I love this movie.
Ashley's movie's great.
So, I mean, like, again, you're going to have a hard time doing a sequel, and I think that this is a really admirable attempt at a sequel that is not retreading the same steps while also trying to be loyal to a classic. And they did a good job with cool job with the found footage and just playing with the tech.
I loved the on-the-ear cameras that they had.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, love, like, those. Again, it solves the problem of, like, why are you still filming? Which is one of my biggest complaints in some found footage is, like, why are you still filming? And I always find it interesting to see when movies are able to, like, put the technology to work for answering that kind of question. And this was a perfect example of that. It's on their ears. They're just running through it. They're not worrying about a big gas camera and trying to film shit. It's like they're running. And I love that.
I'm just starting to think about, and I thought about this, was, like, the way that, especially when Lisa, played by Kelly Hernandez, is with the camera, there's, like, an intimacy when she's filming people, at least in the beginning, like, people's faces. And I think it's really interesting seeing how found footage plays with that. Because I think, like, with this movie, with these characters, there's, like, a lot of relationships going on. Like, people are dating, people have been best friends for certain periods of time, and there's, like, a lot of relationship dynamics going on. So I think the way they film at the beginning is really interesting to show, like, how she's establishing intimacy with the camera and establishing that kind of intimacy and trying to, like, understand the whole, all of the dynamics as Lisa's, like, a kind of an outsider looking in and everything. So I think this also does that. And I think the Blair Witch does that really well too. Like, they're not, because, like, Heather and Josh know each other, but they don't know Mike as well. And so there's an interesting way they use the camera to kind of create that curious intimacy of, like, who are you? How do I get to know you?
And there's tension there.
Yeah. And so, like, that constant, like, zooming in on people's faces and, like, close-ups, but they're like, what the fuck, get out of my face. But it's like this really, it's like a curiosity you're trying to, like, quench while also film it. It's really interesting. I love found footage, obviously, and I think it's just, like, seeing how both Blair Witches kind of tackle that intimacy in the beginning with close-up, I think is really cool.
I agree.
I was thinking about that today.
Just a fun movie.
But yeah, it's fun. Y'all, it's on HBO Max. Max.
Never gonna call it Max.
No. Like, give it a try again if you didn't like it. And if you liked it, watch it again, because you'll probably enjoy it just as, even if not more, I think.
It deepened my appreciation, minus the little niggling parts. But speaking of movies that deserve love, that I think some people might have missed, what are we talking about for found footage next week, Mary Beth?
Because I also missed it. We're actually going to watch a found footage movie that Terry has seen and I haven't. We're the tables have turned, if you will. We're watching Missing, which is out this year, and it's from the people who did Searching, and it is on the same Netflix universe.
Yeah.
So give it a watch. And then our last episode of 2023 is coming out on Monday. Terry, what are we talking about?
We're talking about 2023, the best movies, the best sequences, the best scenes that we love, festival favorites that are coming out, our favorite discoveries from the podcast, both from Little Cuts and the main feed. We're talking it all. It's going to be a big celebration of 2023. So we're going to put it to bed, and it's going to come out on the very first day of January of the new year. So it'll be perfect. Perfect timing.
I think I've seen most things at this point to make an accurate call. I don't know. Who knows? So we'll find out. I'm excited to see what's on our list, because there's a lot of weird shit out this year, and my list is very weird. So I'm very excited to see how
my list is weird. Are going to be different, like this year.
I think they are going to be very different. Because there's stuff on here where I'm like,
mostly. Oh God. I think there's going to be some overlap, but
there'll probably be some. It's very funny editing, like, the best of list for Dread Central, too, because I'm just, like, seeing what everyone else is liking, and I'm like, where do I fall? And, like, which weird shit am I championing in my list that four people have seen and that I refuse to let go of because I need everyone to know about them? We all know my end of year lists are half of that shit. It's just like, here's all the movies that no one else saw that I made part of my personality in 2023.
And I think a couple of those movies are going to be crossovers for both of us. Although I think there's going to be one that won't be on mine that's on yours, for sure.
Yeah, I think I know what it is. I think I know what that is too.
But I'm very excited. We haven't recorded it yet, but I'm very excited to talk
about
it.
Very excited.
So look forward to that on Monday.
Also, to all of you fucking people who watched like 400 plus movies this year, what the fuck? Someone I saw said they watched over 1,000 movies this year.
I don't know how.
In the titty shit are you watching 1,000 movies a year? What? Are you counting shorts? Like, I need to know. 1,000? God damn, I thought I watched over 300 this year and I thought that was big numbers. That's rookie shit.
I'm on a downward spiral, apparently, of movie watching this year, because I typically watch over 300, and this year I have only logged 261 on Letterboxd, which I still think is a lot of movies.
I just broke 300, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I was looking through my diary, I was like, oh, I was in Japan for 2 weeks, and then I was making a movie for a month, so, like, I had at least almost 2 months of my year that I was not watching anything, and I was like, damn, gotta get those numbers up for now. But even though it felt like I was watching a movie almost every single fucking day. So it's like, how do all of you watch this much content?
I don't.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know.
Anyway, every year I have the same complaint because every year it's just very weird. But that's fine. I cannot see it all. And I need to just remember that even though I would like to be able to see it all, it's just not physically possible. Anyway, you've heard from us, listeners. We want to hear from you. Did you watch anything that we watched this week and have thoughts? Do you have suggestions for what we should be talking about? Send us an email at squaredforlifepodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us directly on Twitter. I am at mbmcandrews on Twitter, and I am at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gailey Dreadful everywhere.
And of course, you got to follow the podcast on all of the social media. We are on Twitter and Blue Sky at Scarred Podcast. And then on Instagram, we are at Scarred for Life Podcast.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And thank you to all our patrons that supported us this year. I know that there was a few months where we went on a hiatus. But I hope that you're enjoying the new stuff that we've been putting out. And thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts to help support us. We look forward to giving you a whole lot more in 2024.
Yes.
So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate the patience with me being gone, doing crazy movie shit in the woods for like a month, life happening and going to Japan. So we appreciate y'all so much for just supporting us. It means the world to have people like y'all. And on that note, thank you to Eric Power for our artwork, and thank you to Sean Keller for our music. And thank you everyone for listening. Please stay safe out there. Most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next year.
Ugh.